It's retro ramble time with a difference. A few of our guests have asked to do it over the internet, which we're more than happy to do. However, we have had to go through a learning curve with Riverside and weird volume issues. Please stick with us while we get things right. Over to you, Tom.
Right, and welcome back to A Retro Rambles with me, TJ, and I have a guest, as you would expect on this. And as you can hear, I'm not walking again, so we are obviously online. So, guest, introduce yourself.
Hey, 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 everybody. This is DJ Slope from the YouTube channel Slope's Game Room.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's really, really appreciated. Now, for those people that may not know who Slopes is,
sure.
He has been on YouTube for a fair while now. How many years?
I think it's about 10, possibly 11 years now. I think we're coming into our 11th year now.
And you basically, it's a really hard one to kind of suggest what sort of videos you do, because one minute you're doing a scam yeah. video explaining to the world what sort of scam is going on in the video game market. But then we get scam videos to do with Brad Pitt turning up.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we get...
It's a weird one, because I started off just wanting to do the history of video gaming, talk about weird niche video game stuff. That's the thing that I'm definitely personally most interested in, you know, looking into that sort of stuff. But as I started doing weirder videos and trying to find cool little angles to make video topics on, I did one on Kickstarters. It was actually a positive one to start with, like games that you want to come out but they never will because they didn't reach their target. So it wasn't like a hit, it wasn't like a scam or anything like that, but people loved it. And as I continued doing these, it turned into its own little sub-series, and now I have two very big different audiences on the channel. One's people that like the history of gaming, and one people that like me looking for scammers. So that's what's happened.
It does attract a really kind of niche number of people, because there is such a market on YouTube for scam baiting and scammer based videos explaining not just kind of the ones that you get on the cell phone. If only you are going, oh, would you like a new phone? We're from Three or whatever, and they're just trying to get credit card details. But even down to, like you say, the kick scammer videos you do, it's just such a bizarre way to scam people, but it seems to be an ever so successful way of scamming people.
Yes, I don't know if you saw the video I released, what is it today? It's Monday, so 2 days ago, was all based on one that came this close to taking me. Close.
I've got to say, there was a little bit of panic for me today, because I watched that on release and I was thinking, oh crap, I hope I'm not the person that randomly messaged him saying, would you like to do a collab that you mentioned at the end? So it's like, oh dear, where do I go with this?
No, it's fine. It's fine. Like I say, 9 times out of 10, you can tell straight away if someone's legit or someone's not. But then you do get that 1% where it's like, hang on, is this a sponsor? Is this someone that wants to collab? Is, you know, like... You know, I know of you, and it's very easy, even if I didn't know of you, to look on your profile and see that other people are following you that I know, and, you know, there's good connections. But then sometimes those things don't add up, and this was one of those times it didn't add up. But part of me was thinking, this is legit. Part of me was thinking, this isn't legit, and I couldn't work it out.
Yeah, and it just shows you how easy those things are to kind of to fall for things to happen. It's
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And no matter who you are, these just happen. But moving away from the scam video, I've got to say the Brad Pitt scam video was incredible to hear about, because obviously, like you said, the news just ran with the very basics. So hear the more in-depth stuff. It just got a little bit crazier.
It was really interesting to look at, like, everyone took that headline, which was technically not incorrect, took those headlines and then just went crazy repeating that one headline and then basing stories around the headline rather than what actually went down. It was quite interesting and quite, I don't know if fun's the right word when someone's getting scammed, but it was quite enjoyable to look into how this, it all went down in different ways, you know.
No, of course. And then finally, of course, like you said at the very beginning, and what you started the channel with, you've got the complete history of. So you've got things like your the Power Stone video, which I was very fond of when I had a Dreamcast, or going down the route of specifically Crazy Taxi was, again, another game from my youth that I probably spent more time playing than doing GCSE revisions.
So it took a lot of my time. I tell you, I maybe put more hours into that game than any other. It's up there.
Exactly. I mean, we just again, I don't know if they do it now, but secondary school, we were on GCSEs and it was like, right, okay, between exams, you don't have to stay in the school. So for us, we could walk up the road. There was the View Cinema and then there was the arcade and the bowling alley. So we spent a lot of time up there. And that was the era Crazy Taxi had just come out with the stand-up cabinet. It wasn't even the sit-down one. It was just the stand-up one.
Yeah.
What was the other one? Gauntlet Legends. So
Gauntlet Legends, yeah.
We spent a huge amount of time up there rather than doing revision like we were meant to. Mm-hmm. It's just that era of gaming.
It's beautiful. Absolutely. I actually used to go underage clubbing, there was this tiny little club back when people could smoke in clubs, at a different time. And they had it was a rock club, and they it was mostly indie music, but they tried to cater to everyone. Like sometimes Limp Bizkit would come on or whatever, they had a little Crazy Taxi cabinet in there, and the same what you're saying, the little sit down one, the sort of one you kneel on the back,
That was the one, little bum rest, and that was basically all you got.
I remember I got very excited one day when Offspring came on. The DJ played Offspring because you couldn't hear the music on the thing because it was in a club. But when they played the Offspring and I was playing Crazy Taxi, saying, "Oh yes, I'm going to get a Class S license today."
Oh, definitely. I mean, the soundtrack to that game alone, and I think actually I commented on your video about this as someone was saying about it's such a shame. I think the Xbox version and then the arcade versions, obviously they changed the music and they removed all the branding. So you lost Pizza Hut, you lost Levi jeans and everything like that.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. So many revisions. It's kind of like New Age Revenge of Shinobi, but they've changed it so many times. You never know what version you're going to get.
Weirdly, if you get the Android or the iOS version, you get the original soundtrack still.
Mm-hmm.
So you still get All I Want by The Offspring. You still get everything else on there. You just don't get the branding.
I see what's quite funny is when they released a PC version, I don't know which version it was, but before the days of Steam, they released it in the trailer for it. They didn't have Offspring on there. A lot of the music was gone, but they showed you in the trailer, and you can even put your own music in, and it had a little thing where you could put the folder. It was just like, I know why you're doing that.
Oh, 100%. So we're on a retro ramble then, and the first question I've asked everyone from Biffo to Nikki last week to Rob in the very first episode, what is your first gaming memory? Now, I'm not saying the first one that you had at home. I mean, literally, the first time you saw a computer game and thought, wow.
Yeah. I think it's between one of two games. One game that's horrendous and one game that's actually quite good, quite nostalgic. It's going to be either Oh Mummy for the Amstrad CPC 464 or Bridget for the Amstrad CPC 464. I probably went up to, like, when I was taken to a pub or something, like, wiggled some controllers on a Pac-Man machine or something, but a Space Invader machine. But proper memory, it'd be one of those two games.
What drew you to the Amstrad the 464, though? Is that the one you had at home?
It was just that when you're that young, I don't even know how young would have been, 5 maybe or something like that. It's the system your parents get. It was very much for the family, but it was very much mine straight away. It was in my room, you have the Amsoft games that come with the system. Bridget was one of them. And for people that don't know, top left-hand corner, the little characters come out and they sort of go along a little path, a little bridge. And as the bridge goes along, these little bits open up and close. And you've got to make sure you close them at the right time so the lemming-type people go over them without falling in the water. It's completely broken. The music's horrendous. It's so bad, in fact, that eventually it gets to a point where you can't save them all. There's no way you can save them all because they're going at the same time. It's all like not bug-tested or anything. It's really bad. Oh Mummy is kind of like a Pac-Man maze game-type thing where you look down. You're a guy in a tomb, like an Indiana Jonesy sort of area. You've got little mummies coming after you. And you basically just have to walk around squares trying to find little trinkets and the key to go to the next room. And that's essentially it. You just keep going and going and going. It's very, very easy nowadays to play as an adult. But as a kid, I played it loads and I still love it.
I was going to say, I'm just looking at them both, and now Oh Mummy is one that I've got memories of. Bridget, I hadn't come across. And when you look at them, it's a stark reminder of the difference in how games looked from that era. So looking at Oh Mummy, it's an incredibly basic-looking game.
Mm.
But the fact that is, and I think Nikki and I chatted about this in the last episode, just because it looked basic didn't mean it wouldn't play well. And in fact, it probably had far better gameplay, as you already explained, than Bridget, which was fundamentally broken.
Absolutely. It was a quality little game. It was and the cool thing about gaming back then, you know, like Atari 2600 era, early home computer eras, the graphics were so basic. When you have that game case and you have that those game graphics, you put them together and your mind does fill in the rest of the blanks, you know.
Of course, then you also, you kind of wanted the game to be good, whether it was or whether it wasn't, because you'd invested the time in loading it. You'd invested in the time in going down to the newsagent or Smith's or Boots to buy it.
Yeah.
So when getting back, you kind of forced yourself to like it, whether it was good or not, I think, 100%. In that time. Whereas I think we're in a much, I would say, better place with digital market, with the fact that you can refund a game now quite easily. And I think Xbox and Sony are pretty decent, actually. If you do it within their time period, they're pretty good at refunding it. Whereas you think back then, you just didn't bother.
But at the same time, you didn't bother because, these games, particularly those ones I mentioned, they were free with the system, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. But they were like a quid, £2 maybe at Boots. So you didn't spend a lot. And I think that's the difference why we didn't get a crash and America did, because they were spending like, what would the equivalent be, like 50 quid or whatever on a horrendous Atari 2600 game. And we would spend £1 on a probably equally horrendous home computer game, but you don't care. And also, we're so tight, the British, that most of the time we would just copy it off our friends anyway, off a dual
100%
tape deck.
100%. Playground copying was the way forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Obviously, you've answered that this next one somewhat with the answer to this one, which is the first console you were bought or you bought. And I say console, but I mean kind of home computer.
So
with the fact that you were bought the Amstrad, what was the first one you actually bought? So the first time you got money went out and bought. Let's go for that. As we know, the Amstrad was your first given to you.
Yeah. So I think I've answered this before on other ones, but I think I might actually give you a different answer because I think I've realised I bought a different one. So in the past, I've said PlayStation. I got myself a job. I'd only get £2 a shift, like literally nothing. It was a chucking logs. There was a farm shop that turned into like just selling logs. We'd go to a place and fill up these bags of logs, and then they would sell them, and I would get a couple of quid. And I managed to save up and get a PlayStation by that. I think, though, what it was I spent about... you decide what the correct answer is. It was either the PlayStation, or for about 60 quid, I bought a Master System adapter for my Mega Drive, which was bought for me, and then my neighbour's entire Master System collection at £1 a pop. So it came with the Master System, because I think what happened was, if I'm remembering correctly, they got bought a Master System converter, but they also got the Mega Drive 2, so their Master System converter didn't work on their Mega Drive. It was the wrong shape. So they sold it to me and all their games so they could buy more Mega Drive games, and then I now had an incredible Master System collection. So I missed out on Master System when it was out, but I got into it during the Mega Drive era.
Yeah, it's, again, a very, very different kind of life now. People don't really get back into... I know people of our generation do. Obviously, we go back and we look at the older games, and like we were saying about before we were recording, the N64, whether or not you had it when you're older, it is much more accessible to get back into it now through emulation, even via the Switch using the Nintendo Online side of things. So we've got a far better chance of looking at those older ones. But back then, we were heavily reliant on traditional computer shops, game shops that really did take in games at pennies and then put them in just a basket in the middle of the room, and you could walk in and it's like, oh, let's see what's in the secondhand basket today. And you'd walk away with something, hopefully, that you could play at home. You're right. It's being able to go back and look at an entire library then. I don't know if we appreciated it as much.
Yeah.
But that sounded like an incredible deal. All the Master System games.
Oh, I reckon there was a lot in there. There was at least 30 games. There was a lot of real obvious standout titles. Like, I know I had Fantasy Zones in there. I had obviously all your major Sonics. There was like an Asterix game in there, which was incredible. The Castle of Illusion, I always used to think. I remember seeing Castle of Illusion for the first time on the Mega Drive and thinking, wow, graphics can't get better than this. Like, this, I'm playing a cartoon. Mm-hmm. This is so good. And then playing Castle of Illusion on the Master System, which isn't too far removed from the Game Gear, if I'm not mistaken, and realizing it's a very different game, and being like, wow, this is actually really good. Like, this is more of a solid platformer than the Mega Drive version. Same with, there were so many in there. So many. There was like Lion King and Aladdin played differently on the Master System to the Mega Drive version. There was like weirder ones I had in there. Like, was it Dragon's? Not Dragon's Crown. There was the Dragon Crystal, I think it was. The Ninja, I've got a lot of nostalgia for. Even things like Great Baseball. I spent a lot of time playing Great Baseball, which is a game probably no one really cares about. But I played that a lot on the Master System, even though I had a Mega Drive, which was, you know, double the power, the blast processing power.
Oh, the good old blast processing. But you've got to... I think people have to remember, as we said earlier, again, it was about what was available to you. So
yeah.
Our first home computer was the ZX Spectrum, and we loved every minute of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you told me that my brother would spend more time playing Grand National, a horse racing game, on it than any other game, I wouldn't have believed you. But he did, because that was available, and he enjoyed it. And like you say with the baseball game, whether or not you like baseball or not, if that's the game you've got, that's the game you play, and you're good at it, you get enjoyment from it.
It's
a weird and wonderful world when we look back at those, and when you realize that those kind of technologies and that style of gaming was just, if that's what's available, that's what we'll play.
For sure.
I guess modern consoles may have somewhat ruined it for us by being so capable. I guess that they're so much more able to give you anything that you want. If you can think of a game, there's probably going to be some version of that out there available now.
Yeah, 100%.
But that's what that is, I guess. that leads us nicely on then. The game shop you remember most. So for me, it was Software Plus. It was a little shop in St Albans. Big yellow banner above the top of it. I just thought it was a one-off. It turned out there was another one possibly in Cambridge or Peterborough. And that's where we got most of our games from. Otherwise, it was Boots or Smith's.
I specifically remember going to WH Smith as a kid and picking up Amstrad games. I specifically remember doing that. I used to live in Maidstone, which was like a bit more of a town area. Eventually, we moved to the sticks, like in the middle of nowhere. But the one I remember the most was me actually having to get on my bike and bike maybe, I don't even know how many miles, like 10 miles or so, to get to Headcorn. And there was a shop called Oriel. And I used to not rent too often, but I did rent games from time to time from there. But that was primarily the game I would buy games from. Oh, there was also a record shop that had called Bangham's in Cranbrook that mostly sold CDs, records and tapes, but they did have one wall of Mega Drive games. And I specifically remember buying things like Fantastic Dizzy from there. I specifically remember buying Batman Returns from there for the Mega Drive as well. Global Gladiators I got from there as well. So yeah, it's crazy. All these years later, I know the place I bought a particular game,
It is funny what you remember. Remembering buying big box games for PC from Woolworths, for example. So we used to have in St Albans a place called the Inn Shops. It was an indoor market. It got run into the ground, sadly, by management. But it was one of these places you went upstairs and then there was just lots of little individual small shops inside it and you could rent them out. There was a game shop up there. And like I was saying, it had a basket in the middle of the room and it was full of last generation's games. So it was Mega Drive games, you name it, and then all on the wall were your PC games, your PlayStation games, your Saturn games, your N64 games. And I used to spend my day in there chatting away to the staff, finding out what was coming up, and which you don't really have that anymore. I mean, what's your thoughts on game and how game is basically no longer a game shop?
It's a nothing shop. I will walk in there. If I walk past a Sports Direct now, which is ridiculous, that's what you have to say, but when I walk past a Sports Direct, I will go in and have a look. And sometimes, you know, I'll find something cheap in there for the kids, but like 99 out of 100, it's never a game I walk out with. Like I walked out there last time, I think, with a Fortnite water gun for my kid, like for Christmas, and it was a fiver, and I'm like, yeah, that'll do. I bought a Squishmallow from there not long ago, which is like a soft toy thing for my daughter. It's not a place you buy games anymore. It's just like...
It's a really weird shop now. When you consider we had Game and Electronics Boutique, mm-hmm. we had Game Station, all of those shops were genuinely games. And yeah, I know Game was always... And EB to a little extent, a little bit different. They had the the occasional board game in there. Then they obviously started doing the technology trade in as well. But
yeah, you had all the phones and stuff, didn't you?
It's such a change now that even to the point that you can't, they were saying they can't sell games anymore. What you'll do is you'll order it and then you can go and pick it up from the store when it comes in, which really defeats the point. Just
exactly. It's so pointless. It's like, I understand why it's there. You know, you got your kids going there, buying their tracksuit bottoms, and, oh, can I buy the latest FIFA? Like, yeah, it's at the back of the shop. Like, it makes sense from a business point of view. But unfortunately, it's just the way the world's going. For the last two or three generations, we've been saying we're going completely discless. They're not going to sell any more cartridges or CDs anymore. But we keep just about holding on. Yeah. Every generation, we get a little bit closer, a little bit closer. They've just announced the Switch 2, and that's going to be having backwards compatible games. So I'm obviously super happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the trailer for it, very excited by it. My concern is Nintendo's not being the best for keeping digital stores open and digital content available to you once you've bought it.
Yeah.
And my greatest concern there, I guess, is that Nintendo's going to go, yeah, here's the Switch 2. All your old Switch games work, but we've also just re-released the entire back catalogue of Switch for Switch 2.
Yeah.
Take on the better resolution, the better speed, and there's a £10 extra charge for those same games.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're going to do that. You just never know. Like, Sony were doing that, like, a while ago, you know? Like, will Nintendo be doing that? Like, from a business point of view, I think that perhaps they should, but from a consumer point of view, I really hope they don't.
I mean, they've already announced the backwards compatibility, which is fine by me. If you've got a collection of games, which I can see behind you, I know you do.
Yeah, I've got about 200 Switch games.
Exactly. So the fact that they will stay working is brilliant. The I guess the concern will be for anyone new coming to the game when those games dry up and CEX starts ramping up the price for secondhand copies, which, to be fair, they already do for anything that's Nintendo branded, the Zelda, Mario games. Straight away, you're paying a premium secondhand on those.
Big time.
It just it's a bit of a crap move. And you're right, Sony did it first. It's just that's the one reason I don't like the whole digital marketplace. I like having that physicality of owning something.
Yeah, I do.
Stay working. And to tell me that I bought something on the Wii that I really enjoyed, and by the way, you can never have it again. That's a bit of a kick in the teeth, and I'm
I don't like digital. I've done it a few times where I've accidentally, like, one of my games on that entire massive bookshelf of Switch games is a code in a box, and it was an accidental purchase. I'm like, damn, you know, that's annoying.
I made exactly the same mistake with the Tomb Raider re-release. I love Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3, wonderful games. Bugger, it was digital. I've reordered it again now because they've done a physical copy, just because I want that physical copy.
Yeah,
I don't want to go this number of years before I can play it again. So, yeah, it is what it is, I guess. But what,
like, my son got, I think it was Lego, whatever the racing game is, the Lego racing game that came out recently. You can build your car out of Lego and it's smashing into other cars, blah, blah, blah. He wanted it. He really wanted it for Christmas. And I was the one buying it for him. And it was like £15 code in a box or £45 cartridge. And I'm like, oh, what do I do? And I eventually bit the bullet and spent £45 on a game that's £15. Like, I just couldn't not do it.
But it will stay working.
It will, yeah. And you know, the next Switch comes along, he can put that in there and he can, like, you know, swap it with his friends, and my sister, my daughter, sorry, can use it on her Switch as well. Like, they have to mess around with accounts.
Yeah, I think the one thing we can hope Nintendo remembers is how they used to treat us. So, Game Boy, we got the Game Boy Color, we got the Game Boy Pocket, and look, they still work with the same game.
Yep.
Game Boy, the Nintendo DS, we can still use the Game Boy games. Let's hope they kind of do the same with the Switch, I guess, because I think it'd be really disappointing if they didn't.
Yeah, I think I've got faith in them. We'll see what happens.
Well, I think they're going to have to, because I'm not sure if they're in a position to lose the faith and carry on being a business the way they are now.
Yeah. Well, I think they would have made a lot more money if they didn't do this, because then all these other companies would continue paying them all the royalties for re-releasing their games again. Mm. You know, we would get all those Street Fighter collections again. We'd get basically everything on that shelf again.
Yes.
Including Nintendo. You know, I mean, the amount of Wii U games I've bought twice now. is what it is, isn't it?
It is. Moving on then, worst gaming memory or your worst letdown moment. So when it comes to gaming, what is your worst letdown moment that's happened to you?
Okay, worst letdown moment. So the one that comes to mind, and I wrote about this actually in a book for Ashins, which is quite a funny one. I went to go and see Michael Jackson live when I was 10. That wasn't a disappointment. I thought that was awesome. Big MJ fan as a kid. The support act, weirdly, was Criss Cross. I don't know if you remember Criss Cross.
Yeah,
they were a
yes.
90s rap group that used to wear their clothes back to front, and they really only had one big hit, which was Jump Jump. I recently found out it was produced by Missy Elliott, of all people. I didn't know that. But they had a game. I fell in love with Criss Cross. Are you looking for it? Have you got
I was
it on
just
the
looking for the Ashens, but I'm sure I've got it here. I think it's in the other room.
Right, okay. the Ashens book. Yeah. They had their own game. There was a series of games for the Mega CD called Make My Video. There was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, in Mark Wahlberg.
I've seen this.
Yeah, there was that. There was an INXS one. There was one called Super Factory, which was like dance music. And then there was also Criss Cross, Make My Video, which I believe was the most popular one. And I was so in love with Criss Cross. For a very short amount of time, I'm embarrassing to say, I put my jeans back to front as well, and also wore my hoodie so that the hood went under my chin. Turns out that game was horrendous. I saved my money for that one. I went and mowed the neighbour's lawn for that one. That sucked. It was really, really bad. For people that don't know, basically, obviously the Mega CD, the big thing about the Mega CD or Sega CD for Americans was that it played full motion video, but obviously a very, very, very low quality version of full motion video. And then they also had proper CD audio music in there as well.
Which, let's face it, gave us some amazing tracks to some amazing games.
Definitely.
So the Sonic games on Sega CD to start with, the soundtrack to that is not surpassed. It's phenomenal.
It's so good. It's so good. My son's obsessed with Sonic right now after seeing Sonic 3, and he was actually listening to Sonic CD music and obviously Sonic R music and stuff. But so the idea was they would play a music video. Jump Jump, I think there was only like 3 songs on there as well. There's like nothing on there, and so while the video is playing along, you can click A and C or B on your controller and make it flip between like random bits of stock footage, so you make your own music video, add effects, basically make it go black and white, pixelated. It was so basic. It's like you play it and then 10 minutes later you finished it. There's nothing else to experience. It was horrendous.
The sort of game that if it had been released 10 years later on a PC, you could have done a huge amount more with it.
Yeah, but and if it was as it was, it would be something that you'd have on a flash site.
Yes, you're right. It would have been.
Yeah.
To be fair, I'm surprised it never did turn up on one of those sites like that. But I can understand why that's kind of the biggest.
It's one of my few early gaming regrets, because most games I bought were like because they were getting mental scores in the magazine. So if I had 50 games, 49 of them were like all top tier Mega Drive games, you know.
So actually, this isn't one of the questions on the list, but were you a Mean Machines person, or what was your magazine?
I actually just went for the Sega official magazine. I got other ones here and there, like Mean Machines and Game Master and stuff like that. But the official Sega magazine, I'd run in there, go straight to the cheat section before I've even left the newsagent, just to like see what was in there. Oh, wow, more Micro Machines cheats places, you know, that sort of thing. Like all the cheats for Jungle Book, there was stupid amounts of those. But then I'd, you know, for the next week or so, just go through every single word in that book, in that magazine.
I do miss those. So we tended to get Game Master, and it was we called them toilet paper books, the old sugar paper books that used to come attached to it. And yeah, you're right. It's like volume one of cheats, and it's Mega Drive. And then slowly
I remember
it progressed.
I had a collection of them, the little thin books, you know.
Yeah, and they were brilliant, though. Really, really good idea. And
I'd even keep ones for the Game Genie, even though I never had one, just to have
just
it along with
case.
The collection.
Retro or modern gaming, then, which would you choose? And I know it's a particularly hard one because there's so many positives on both sides.
Yeah. It's blasphemous to say, but modern, honestly. But when I say modern, I actually only play one or two, probably two at a push, big AAA, you know, Uncharted type games or you know, stuff like that. Most of my modern gaming is done by just obsessing over indie games or, you know, Nintendo first party games. I'll probably play the vast majority of those. But they're very retro feeling for the most part, most of them.
Yeah, I think Nicky was saying about games like Cuphead, for example, where it's a beautiful modern game, but really it plays just like the retro games.
Oh, 100%.
It looks it.
And that's the thing, like, you do get a lot of people, and I'm not bashing anyone that thinks this way, but you do get a lot of people in the retro space that will say, like, gaming isn't as good as it used to be. I'm like, well, no, if you actually go and look, like, practically every game you grew up with, there'll be someone that's so in love with that game that they're remaking it or trying to do a spiritual succession of that game, and they've got better tools to make that game. They're not limited by hardware anymore if they're making retro styled games anymore. I mean, at the end, you know, classic games are classic games still. That, you know, the best of the best classic games. A lot of those classic arcade games from the arcade era, your Space Invaders, your Pac-Mans, all that sort of stuff will always be top tier because they do one thing and they do that one thing brilliantly. But a lot of games, so many games, you go back and play and you're like, this is quite a slog, actually. This is quite a slog, you know. Like, it was a different mindset back then. They were playing to what they could make. Nowadays, you can see how gaming has advanced. And in most areas, even, they have advanced.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one that comes to mind straight away, School Days was a huge favourite of mine growing up. It's School one Days, of the ones that we went and played multiple times. Naming all the teachers after people at our school and naming the kids after people at our school. It's just one of those things you did. There's a remake called Class of 99, and it's Windows compatible. It works on Windows 11, and it's this beautiful recreation of it with a little bit extra added, and it's absolutely phenomenal. So you're right, the people that have the love for the games that go out and remake them, beautiful. But
it was like I was saying earlier, I remember when I first played Castle of Illusion, and I was just like, jaw drops. I feel like I'm playing a cartoon. Like, it can't look better than this. This is so good. And to this day, you know, once a year or so, I'll play through it. It's so easy, but it's just such a fun, relaxed, this looks the business sort of game. But then if you compare that to, I mean, I know it's a little bit different with the genre, but like you say, with Cuphead, I mean, you are literally now playing a cartoon. Like, and I know that you always say games can't look better, but I mean, I don't know if a game looking like a cartoon can ever look better than that. Like, you know,
Cuphead is one of those special games that I don't think you could make it any better than it was.
Yeah,
everything
particular style it's going for.
Well, yeah, for the style it's going for, when it just genuinely felt like you were playing a cartoon of the era. It was a really weird find when that really kind of popped up and people started playing it, and I started doing kind of the online videos for it, and then got to try it myself. It's like, this is weird but amazing at the same time.
Yeah,
it's just not expected.
Absolutely. And it's an absolutely stunning game. It really, really is. And there's so many games like it as well. Wario Shake It Up on the Wii. I mean, I know you could HD that, make it look less pixelated and stuff. But I mean, that's the same sort of thing where, like, you are literally playing a cartoon. By that point, it looks beautiful. It's really good.
Okay, final question then. What is your desert island game? So, which game would you take out there and just go, I can live with this?
My all-time favourite game is Sonic 3 and Knuckles, but once you've completed it, I like to give it a little bit of time and play it again. If I'm on a desert island, I want a game I can just play over and over and over and over again. It would probably be something like probably a puzzle game or Binding of Isaac. I mean, I've put hundreds of hours into that game. I'll say Binding of Isaac just because, as long as there's a power source, I'm never going to run out of wanting to play that game.
You're going to need a game that you literally can't 100%.
Probably something like that. I'm also weirdly obsessed with a game called Dome Keeper, which is another indie game. But I'll go with Binding of Isaac.
Good choice. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on. Now, this is the next bit for this really is really simple. Please tell everyone about your channel, what you do, and how they can support you. Because as we did with Mr. Biffo, all creators are doing this for, in effect, free for us to watch, and that makes it incredibly hard to live. So how can people find you, support you? How can they help you continue creating the things that you are creating for our entertainment?
Well, I appreciate that. And I'll add on to that. I'm speaking to a lot of creators at the moment, big creators, that since about October, November of last year, so 2024, we've been getting people have been messaging me like, what are your views like? What's going on? And YouTube's in a weird space right now. So people don't seem to be getting the traction that they used to. Where I've my last two videos I've released, you as a creator, you release videos that you know will do incredibly well. Some maybe, and then some, you're just doing it for, you know, because you want to do it. The last two videos should have been surefire hits, and they were, and then they instantly dropped off. There's something going wrong with YouTube right now. So not just me, but if you are wanting to support your creators, now is the people that you like, go and do that thing. It's a really tough time on YouTube at the moment. And I very much appreciate you giving me the opportunity just to be able to tell people about what it is that we do. I mean, if you want to come and find me, just Google it. Just Google Slopes Game Room. You'll find me on all of the different socials. On YouTube is obviously where I live. I put videos up. I try and do them weekly, at least every couple of weeks. And just go support the creators that you like the most. That's what I'll say.
Fantastic. We'll make sure, obviously, in the metadata of this episode, all your links are in there, any Patreon links as well. And I'll just reinforce what Slopes was saying there. It is an incredibly tough time for all creators, no matter what
they're doing, all creators.
Podcast, YouTube, TikTok, you name it. It's a very, very weird world with what's going on right now, anywhere in the world. So if you literally use any of those kind of platforms just to chill out, relax, and just hide away from the world, do think about, if you can, again, also only if you can, don't put yourself out of pocket, but if you can support people, please do it, because that entertainment isn't easy to make. And I know the hours you must put into your videos.
Some of them take an insane amount of time. This particular one, this kick scammer video I'm working on at the moment, about a specific Sega kick scammer video, I'm sure people can work out what it is. It's taking a long time. There is always new information that I'm having to work out. I didn't want to say go and support me on Patreon or anything like that. Just go and support the people that you like most, the people that you like watching.
100%. 100%. Support the people you watch.
Yeah.
Do support them, even if it comes down to just watching the advert
and
YouTube.
Yeah, please leave a comment. If you can't do anything else, leave a comment. I know it's such a annoying thing that every YouTuber has to say, but literally leaving a comment, a like, and if you want to go the extra mile, sharing the video on different sites or Discords, whatever you're a part of, really does help. I do notice it when. And it takes a couple of days for it to happen. I look on my phone and I'm like, oh, okay, something's happened. Something's happened to my video where it's gone boom. And it just, and then I'm like, I don't know what that is. It normally takes about a day or two for the analytics to catch up. You're like, oh, wow, okay, someone's gone and gone crazy and shared my video in a big group on Discord. Oh, not Discord, on Reddit or wherever it may be. And then I can actually go and find that myself. And if I can find that, I will always go and say thank you. It is very much appreciated if you do that sort of stuff.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for being part of this. It's really appreciated from our side. And if you would like to listen to more, you can find us on all podcast platforms. Just look at the Variety Show podcast and you'll find all of our stuff there. We also host the Untitled Sci-Fi Show, and then part of the channel84.co.uk network. We also have Lightly Used and we have Who Takes the Socks Off, who are two awesome other podcasts that you should go and listen to too. Thank you again, and we will see you next time.
Cheers. Bye, guys.
This was a Studio Channel 84 Network show. To find more, head over to channel84.co.uk now.